Well, hello and welcome back to another episode of the Asking for a Friend podcast. It's an elder-led ministry of Believers Baptist Church in Emory, Texas. My name is Duffy Henderson, and I am your host. The Asking for a Friend podcast exists as a weekly resource for the edification and the benefit of God's people. Here we hope to provide helpful, thoughtful, and most importantly, biblical material as we address everyday life questions and issues. So if you find this podcast helpful, please take a few moments to share it with someone that you think would also benefit from it. Thanks for listening in, and may the Lord bless this episode greatly, in particular, to you as a means of grace for your spiritual growth and your benefit. Well, today I am joined by Patrick Covington and Kyle Slaymaker, two of our elders here, and it is a privilege for us to discuss biblical eldership as the topic for today's episode. This is another addition in our new members series. So before we jump into things, men, how are you doing?
Doing good.
Yeah, doing great.
Glad to be here.
Good, good.
Do kind of question your, you know, reliability if you're going to have Kyle and I as the ones talking about biblical eldership, but...
Oh, I thought you guys would be perfect for this conversation today.
Kyle, at least, yeah.
Yeah, we're the least, no, maybe not the least elders, but we're close.
Hey, what is it? Jesus said something about the least among you will be the
greatest.
Right,
that's right.
Yep. Young in years, therefore we're great.
Picked the best two here. Well, as you've already heard and as you've seen on the title, we're going to be talking about biblical eldership today, and we're just going to cover some common questions that might arise for some who maybe biblical eldership, this concept is a new concept, specifically those who would be coming to join our church and curious about what makes us tick, like what sort of things are distinctive about believers. And so I'm going to pass it off in just a moment to Patrick, but we do have, if you are listening, and are curious, on our church website page, we do have an area where we have all of our distinctives listed. So you can actually go on there and check those out at any point, and we may link that in the show notes of this episode. But we do want to just start off the episode with just a basic, simple question. What is an elder? Patrick, can you give us just a basic definition of that?
Sure. Yeah, an elder, really, simply put, on the simplest of terms that I can come up with, is an elder is a pastor. Right. Commonly in our culture, that's what you hear them called. Elders, pastors, there's a third term for it in the New Testament called an overseer. These three are really used interchangeably, all referring to the same office, and that is that office that refers to the spiritual leaders of a church body. And if you're looking at our distinctive page, the beginning of the second sentence there at the top, it sums it up well, in that it says it refers to this unique group of leaders who have the responsibility of for overseeing the people of God. So I think simplest of terms, that's what we're talking about when we talk about biblical elders.
Well, cool. I think that's very helpful. And Kyle, just to kind of piggyback off this first question, who can be an elder? Is it a limited role? Can anyone potentially become an elder? You know, let's just briefly talk about that for a moment.
Yeah. So, I mean, thankfully, the Bible does give us some guidelines as far as who can be an elder. First and foremost, it is for believers, members of the church, men in the church. It is men that are to be elders in the church. In Titus 1, we have a list of qualifications for elders. And if you'd like, I can read those out. But the qualifications for elders is they must be husband of one wife. His children must be believers and not open to the charge of debauchery or insubordination. And he must be above reproach, not arrogant or quick-tempered, not a drunkard or violent or greedy for gain, but hospitable, a lover of good, self-controlled, holy, upright, and disciplined. He must hold firm and trustworthy the word is taught, so that he may be able to give instruction in sound doctrine and also be able to rebuke those who contradict it. It also talks about, I think, in Timothy, where it talks about that he must not be a recent convert, or he may be, it said he must not be a recent convert, or he may become puffed up with conceit and fall into condemnation of the devil. So,
is that 1 Timothy 3?
Yeah, that's 1 Timothy 3, verse 6. So,
yeah, perfect.
The idea is it's someone who's a believer, someone who has ability to teach, someone who has been not a recent convert in the church, and has those qualifications.
Right, is above reproach, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that just reading off, I mean, that's, you just read straight from the pages of Scripture, and, you know, we might think of someone as an elder being like the perfect man, right? Like, there's no one that's going to actually meet all of these qualifications all the time. So just briefly, I'll just open it up just real quickly, kind of off the cuff. Does that, do those qualifications, does that, you guys are both in the office of elder, how do you guys feel whenever you read a list like that? And is there hope for maybe some who would aspire to be, you know, in the future or something like that? How do you work through those qualifications just briefly?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, it ought to characterize us, I think, is probably the best way of saying it. You know, the qualification there in 1 Timothy chapter 3, you know, saying you must not be violent but gentle, that is talking about a pattern of life, right? It doesn't mean that, you know, one time you get upset with your child and blow up and all of a sudden you're disqualified for eldership for the rest of your life, right? That's not what it's talking about. It's more concerned with a pattern of life, a character trait of men who would be qualified. So, yeah, if the expectation was perfection, we would all fall terribly short.
Yeah, isn't that nice that it's not?
Mm-hmm. And in Titus, you know, as I read it, you know, it talked a little bit as I was reading it. I like the definition of 1 Timothy where it talks about your children. It's, you know, it talks about keeping your children submissive. So, you know, it's not saying that if you're an adult and you have a child that's not a believer, you know, that disqualifies you either.
Yeah.
It's more about the idea of being able to control your household and being able to raise your children up, being pouring into your children. And the idea of if you can rule your household well, then, you know, you'd be qualified to be an elder.
Yeah, so there would be an observable pattern of order within mm-hmm. your household, right?
Exactly.
From the top down. I think that's really, really helpful. Okay, so, you know, as I was kind of thinking about putting this episode together, this, of course, is a supplement to some of our new members' classes, but I was thinking about some potential questions, maybe some objections, some difficulties. But I thought about this, is we may have someone who has never really heard the term used at all in their church experience, the term elder. And so they come to our church and hear that, and we have four or five of you guys installed. So why haven't some folks, what would be some reasons why some folks haven't heard the term, even if they've been in church for most of their lives?
Well, I just spoke up without ever considering you, Kyle. Sorry. It's a shame that it's like that. I mean, sometimes, you know, it could be people just coming from different backgrounds and then the office being called different things, something as simple as a pastor or a Presbyterian background, even a presbyter, something like that. But we can't ignore the reality that especially in the Southern Baptist world around us, there is not a plurality of elders ruling churches. And it's a shame, really. The model for so many churches is you have one pastor who effectively acts as the president and the CEO, and then he has a bunch of deacons surrounding him that effectively just do his bidding. And that's very problematic, I mean, for obvious reasons. You know, one man is going to have, even the best of men, going to have, you know, blind spots and issues. And it's really important, then, the plurality of elders. We're kind of getting ahead of myself a little bit. But, you know, considering, you know, one another and how multiple godly men complement and help people stay on the straight and narrow versus veering off and one man's direction. So that's a common reason, I think, for most around us would be most churches don't have a biblical model of church leadership.
Yeah, I would agree with you there. Kyle, do you have anything to add to that?
No, and I'm glad Patrick spoke up, because I was not raised here. I was raised up in Alaska, and the church I was raised in actually did have elders. So for me, it was a very normal and common thing for me.
That's
so
fascinating.
To come down, and so it's not something I was exposed to a whole lot, of the idea of not having elders. So, you know, and I know also there's some, I think of the Church of the Mormons, you know, they like to use the term elder, and I think they twisted some of those terms. So I think maybe that also some Christians have tried to, you know, disassociate themselves from those terms. Yeah. But biblically, I mean, we see that that is what that's what we are called and what are to be our elders or overseers.
Yeah, dozens of times in the New Testament, right? Yeah. Yeah, my background's completely different. I was raised in, you know, small little churches, and none of them actually being Southern Baptist, but more independent Baptist churches around. And it was one pastor and maybe an associate pastor, and that's what we had. And that's what I knew. And then branching out, you know, discovered that wasn't the best way.
Yep. So. I knew the elders well because me and my buddy, we like to do silly things around the church. And I remember one time we were playing baseball in the backyard and broke the window. And me and my buddy had to go sit in front of the elder board and explain what happened. And they had to, they doled out the punishment to us that we had to, I think we had to like mow the lawn or do something so we were able to pay for the
those
window.
Those guys are cruel. So, yes. Man. What punishment?
I was...
Well, that's great. Yeah, so what's interesting is after you guys have just said that, so there's three of us talking about this, and Kyle grew up with elders in his church. Patrick did not, and neither did I. I also grew up, not also, I grew up in the Southern Baptist world full on, but I also grew up in churches that were led by one pastor with deacons. That's just, that was how you did church. You might have an associate pastor. You know, that was that's a common thing. Senior pastor, associate, and then there's like, you know, three or four or five deacons. And so I came across this whole concept really about 10 years ago or so when I came up to East Texas for the first time. And I was introduced to some of the Nine Marks material on ecclesiology, on church polity. I know those are big words, but just how to govern and order church structure and so those kinds of resources were my introduction to the whole concept of elders, and so that was a new thing for me. So anyway, that may be the case for many listening as well. So I think that would be helpful. Okay, so I know we've touched on it already, but just speak, Kyle. Why don't you speak just a little bit more clarity? And I think that we've already said this, but let's reiterate before we move forward. Is there a functional or any actual difference between a quote-unquote pastor and a quote-unquote elder?
No. I will say that, you know, the office of elder, pastor, functionally are the same as we see it biblically. There's not like separate qualifications for each one. We see the tasks laid out the same. Now, in our church and in most churches, you know, you may have staff elders, you know, that get paid by the congregation. And Patrick and I, we are lay elders. That means that we have our other jobs. And
does that mean you guys take lots of naps? I'm sorry.
The opposite.
That's a pretty good dad joke.
Yeah.
I know. Lay I'm elders. Sorry. Yes. Couldn't help myself.
Yes. No. No, that means we have two jobs. We have a full-time job, and then we are we're also elders.
You guys kind of have to work harder, actually. Yeah, so you can own that, by
Don't tell Jason.
Don't tell Jason that.
I'll be in your corner for that. Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, I will say that different elders have different roles within the church, but as far as the function of an elder and the elder group, then the function of the elder is the same as a pastor.
Yeah, I think that's really good. Thanks for that. So, you've read off the qualifications, and so wherever that particular elder ends up serving in a particular manner, all of them across the board must meet these qualifications, right? There's not like a first tier, second tier in that regard, right? Yeah. Would you guys both agree? Mm-hmm. Just for clarification.
Absolutely. And, you know, off air before we were, you know, on air and formally getting the conversation going here, we actually brought up the historical Reformed Baptist, particular Baptist distinction of qualified teaching men, qualified men versus pastors or elders. And I think one of the somewhat key distinctions between the two is qualified men who can teach, obviously, are the gifted teachers, but they may not meet every single qualification of a pastor, or they may not be qualified to rule. They may not have governing gifts, if you will, that you see in the qualifications listed, but they're good teachers. So a distinction even could be made there where all elders or pastors must meet the same requirements, must be all of those things listed in 1 Timothy 3, Titus 1, But gifted teachers who may not meet everything can have a subordinate role, if you will, within the church to teach a class or something like that.
Yeah, that would fall under the leadership of the elders. Yeah, exactly. I'm glad you said that. That would fall in the realm of like Sunday school teaching, maybe Sunday evening teaching, where it's a little bit more informal teaching. They're still teaching the Word of God, but they're under the elders,
and even
under their guidance, and you know,
yeah, wisdom. Even trying to grow younger future
exactly.
elders. You know, how can you test them and really know that they're able to teach well unless you give them opportunities to teach and maybe preach on a Sunday morning, right?
That's excellent.
Who is growing into an eldership role? Just a helpful distinctive maybe for us, as
like
even
that.
In our church, there are men who teach Sunday school that aren't actually elders.
Yes, exactly. All right, so we've looked at a few questions already. So let's talk a little bit about, if you've been to our church long at all, you know that there are, we've already mentioned it as well, but there are multiple elders at our church. I think if my count is correct, there are five currently, as of September of 2023, five elders. Two of those are vocational, and three are lay elders. So let's talk about this plurality concept. How is it, there might be a question, how is it then that one church can have more than one pastor? You know, that might, I know that sounds a little bit
a bunch
simple,
of chiefs just can't work, right?
But that, I mean, someone may have a real question. How can one church have so many pastors if we're saying that elder pastor is the same thing?
Right.
That may be a little new.
Well, yeah,
some.
Sure. That comes from the thought that pastor is the president and CEO, right? Because functionally, so many churches have that model.
Yeah.
But as we've already briefly mentioned, it's actually very important that you have a plurality of elders. It's good for the church because they can function in such a way that something I am not gifted in, Kyle is gifted in, and something Kyle's not gifted in, Jason is gifted in, and so on and so forth. We have various, and that even plays back into our various everyday functions, play into the strength of each elder. We are all there to hold each other accountable. If one of us is getting off base, the rest, you know, come around them and whip them. Not literally, guys. you know, we, in love.
Hey, who wants to join the team?
In love, bring them back and encourage them back to the truth. So it's very important, and you see it in Scripture time and again. You know, I think it's true that pretty much every time the elder word for elder, pastor, overseer is used, it's in the plural in the New Testament, with the exception of, I believe, Paul refers to himself in the singular, and I believe Timothy does as well. Other than that, every time it's appoint overseers, appoint elders, the pastors, right? You have Titus 1:5 talking about appointing elders in every city. James chapter 5 and verse 14 tells you to call for the elders of the church in the context of praying for the sick.
Hebrews 13, I think, is another one that we talked about prior. It speaks of plurality there.
Sure.
It's always in the plural.
Almost every single time. Yeah, again and again and again, all through Acts. I believe there's somewhere around 20 references to elders in the plural, and every single time.
Jerusalem Council, Acts 15, I think, is another one that I would think of. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So it's all through there. Even in Acts 20, where Paul is speaking to the Ephesian elders, right? He's pulled the elders together, and he's pleading with them. You know, it's not the Ephesian elder, but it's the elders of the church at Ephesus. So it's plain and evident in the Scriptures, and it's very, very important, because no one of us five would always be where we need to be apart from the other of the five.
Yeah, and I think I'll pass this to Kyle, but I think that there's a trite kind of like a just a cultural phrase sometimes that we say, but I think that it rings true in this context, that there's strength in numbers. There's wisdom in counsel from another brother. That we take that from from Proverbs. One who is wise would consult another, and I think that that would play into a huge reason why a church ought to have multiple elders.
Right, and the reason it works so well is because no one elder exists to serve his agenda, to promote his agenda.
Yeah.
The function of all five of us is God's agenda,
a
right?
common agenda.
There's a
right.
common agenda that we're all striving toward, not our own. So it works You know, there's not that tension there.
Yeah, there you go. You have anything to add here?
Yeah, I do. You know, you referenced Hebrews 13, and, you know, that one definitely does talk about it being plural. Obey your leaders and submit to them. So them is the plural. But then it goes on to say, for they are keeping watch over your souls as to those who will get, as to those who will have to give an account. We have over 200, 250 people here. I mean, you know, any given Sunday we may have, you know, 175 to 200, but, you know, can you imagine if it's just one person that is trying to have to give an account for 250 souls? I mean, that's a heavy burden to try to bear. I mean, a lot of people think of a pastor as just every Sunday giving up and preaching a sermon and then going back into his office, but there is a lot more to pastoring than just delivering the Sunday service, right?
And that's the tip of the iceberg.
That is the very tip of the iceberg. I mean, that's why, you know, pastor and shepherd, they're synonymous. You know, you think of a shepherd, I mean, they're somebody that's out there with their flock, caring for their flock, loving their flock, protecting their flock. And, you know, just to think of one guy being able to carry that burden all by himself, that's another reason I think a plurality of elders is so important, is to be able to more effectively to shepherd the flock. You know, there's relationships that Patrick has with, you know, members of the congregation that I don't, and vice versa. And we have Kent, who's been an elder and, you know, who is an elder, and he has relationships with people that I don't have strong relationships with. And so, you know, and that's natural and that's good. And, you know, that's one of the ways that we as elders can give an account to those in the church as we watch over their souls. So
that's very good. Yeah. And so a kind of a follow-up question to the plurality question. Would you guys have anything to say? It can be brief even, but is there like a number to shoot for with however many elders? Like, talk about that. Like, do you have too many? Can you have too few? I think we all agree that one is too few.
One is too few, yes. You can have a plurality of elders without more than one. No,
that's not,
I mean,
to say that a church is in sin with one. If that's all at the moment that the Lord has provided that church, of course. But I think that we probably agree that that church should strive to add to, if there's just one man available at the time, then you start with one and you move forward.
Yeah.
You want a simple answer. Here's a simple
answer.
Answer. They should have exactly as many as they need.
There you go.
Hey, I like that. I like that. I'm going to say that one more time.
They should have exactly as many as they need.
I like that.
Yeah.
I think it does have to do with, I think the Lord blesses each congregation differently. There are some congregations that the Lord just uses the particular church to raise men up constantly. He gives the church men, he raises them up, and they send them out. You know, there are churches that do that well. There are churches that are not that way. And I don't think that either one of those is wrong, but I think just generally speaking, I like what you said, as many as is needed for that particular congregation. If there's a congregation in need, well, that church ought to be striving to raise up other men to meet those needs, right? Everything to add to that?
I mean, obviously, I mean, I think the size of the congregation is probably going to somewhat dictate, you know, how
of
many
course,
elders
yeah.
are in the church. Yeah. But, yeah, you were talking about listening to Nine Marks. I was listening to some of their stuff even this morning, and, you know, I think they have 30-something elders. And I'm like, wow, that's a lot of elders in a church.
Can you imagine an elder meeting?
I know. That's what I was thinking. Like, we have, you know, five, and sometimes our elder meetings, you know, go on and on with discussion. I can imagine having 30. So, but I think, yeah, I think what Patrick said is great.
Yeah, somewhat trite. I mean, Kyle said better hits the nail on the head.
If we had 30 elders with 170 attendants, that would be strange.
Yes, that would be strange.
But at the same time, if we only had two elders, you know, bumping up 170, 180, that would also, I think, be a little strange, right?
Mm-hmm.
In my mind, I would kind of see both of those not being a good scenario. It's like, where are the men? You know, if it was only a few, why don't you guys have any more elders here? So those are interesting questions, I think. Any other thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, it all was dependent upon things that have already been said, you know, size of the congregation, even perhaps maybe pragmatically thinking the structure and the function of the church, you know, how with the way the church is in the particular context, you know, how many people can one pastor effectively care for?
That's a great question.
You know, can we care for 50 people well all the time? And I think the answer is no. right? You've got to have enough to where you can have, you know, a circle of influence where each pastor is caring, you know, personally for everybody in the church. You know, each pastor has a sphere, right?
So the elder team collectively serves and everyone.
Absolutely.
And right. It isn't a, you know, you end up with five miniature congregations in your congregation.
Not at all, right.
So that's not obviously what we want. But the point is, I love what you just said, is how many people can one man, you know, just and baseline care for, you know, spiritually and emotionally in some cases, and all of, I mean, think about just in your own personal life, all of the ups and downs, the challenges, the trials, just in your own personal life, and then multiply that by, right, you know, 10 or 15 or 20. That's a lot for just
right.
one man.
These are people we need to care for well enough.
That's right.
With the reality of Hebrews 13, that we're going to have to give an account for their souls.
Exactly.
So that's it's an important
heavy burden to bear.
Heavy, mm-hmm. heavy burden to bear.
Yeah.
So it may work out that, you know, the lay elders have smaller, you know, spheres of influence than the on staff, just from the functionality of, you know, Kyle and I work 40, 50, 60 hours a week, whatever the week demands, whereas the staff elders are able to pour in all through the week. That's not saying anything positive or negative about either lay or staff. We joked earlier about how we have a harder job, but I would be almost willing to bet that Jason Erland has a harder job because he bears a heavy load and he can't turn it off and not think about it while he's doing his other job.
Yeah, he lives to shepherd. He lives for his people. And I think that that is, you know, that's a mark, honestly, that all pastor shepherds ought to shoot for, of course. Okay, so let's, we probably need to wrap this up in about 5 minutes or so. Really good conversation, guys. Thank you for your time today. So let's just end the episode. Someone may be curious about, and of course we can talk about the two different roles, the lay and vocational, but just in general, and if you have specifics, that's fine. What does an elder do? What are his responsibilities? And you can think about this not quite so much in the, you know, the super mundane detail, but just think more broad picture. Like, here at Believers Baptist, we have 5 men who are on the elder team. And what are just some responsibilities that you guys have? And just kind of leave that open.
Yeah, there's a lot that could be said there for your question. But one thing I do want to do as we kind of dive into this, the 1689, the Second London Baptist Confession of Faith that the elders would pretty well hold to at our church, on its chapter number 26 on the church, the 10th paragraph is super, super helpful. And we won't read the whole thing, but just the first two sentences summarize really the role of an elder better than I could, so I would just prefer to read it. It says, "The work of pastors is to give constant attention to the service of Christ in his churches, in the ministry of the word and prayer. They are to watch over the souls of church members as those whom must give an account to Christ." So that kind of, you know, summarizes what we've been talking about. And there's several scriptural texts that we could go to, and perhaps we'll hit a few. But the nuts and bolts are, we are responsible for the ministry of the word, the ministry of prayer, and caring for the souls of those under our flock, if you will.
Yep.
Yeah, Kyle.
And the ministering of the word, you know, I mean, we do elders meetings. We meet once a month. So I mean, that's a big part of what we do as elders. As far as, you know, us getting together and meeting, and, you know, the ministering of the word is not just the teaching, but, you know, we come together. We just did it last week where we come together and we discuss a tough text, and, you know, we kind of dive through it and dig into it, and, you know, talk about what we you know, what it means, or you know, and so. So yeah, I mean, as elders, we're praying, we're teaching. You know, in Titus, I believe it's Titus. No, it's not Titus. It's Peter. I like here. It's 1 Peter 5, and verse 3. It talks about being an elder, to shepherd the flock, and then it says we're not to be domineering over those in charge, but being examples to the flock. So the idea also that as elders, we're to be examples to the flock, right? Our lives should should reflect what we talk about on a weekly basis. We shouldn't leave the building and live a completely separate life, you know, aside from the church. So, you know, it's a big thing to be able to do. So I think being examples to the flock, teaching, praying, I think those are all primary or all example or functions.
A text comes to mind as well. I think it's Ephesians 4 where God has put there's a few like pastor, teacher, evangelist, and those kinds of things. Put them in the churches to raise up the saints for the work of ministry too. So there's an equipping element to what you guys do as well. Equipping believers within the church to therefore then go and do the work of ministry as well. So I guess what I want to bring out there is that although you guys lead in the ministries, you lead in the ministering of the word, you aren't the only people doing ministry.
Correct.
At our church. You're helping equip, train, teach those others to do the same thing. So that's it. And that can be in many different ways. Patrick, have anything to add to that at all?
I don't know that I have any other thoughts surrounding it that we want to dive into today. So
fair point. Fair point.
That summarizes it pretty well.
Well, I think that will wrap our episode up today. We certainly thank you, listener, for taking your time to listen to the Asking for a Friend podcast and this particular episode in our new members series. We surely hope that it's been a blessing to you. Don't forget, if you like what you've heard today, you can like and share these podcasts. Please do for us, especially those who are locally that would be helped by this content. Share it through social media, email, text message, however you share media. That would be great. And don't forget, the final thing is you can submit us a question. If you have any thoughts for us on the Asking for a Friend podcast, you can go to our website, bbcemory.org. Go to the media tab, scroll to the bottom of the page, and there you'll find a box that you can submit us a question or content to consider at a future podcast date. But as usual, until next time, grace and peace be with you all.